Okay, so I'd like to do something that's a bit different from the previous talk. I'd like to talk about something I wish I understood rather than something I really understand. And I will talk about Maurice Wancik. In fact, what I'm going to be describing is joint work with Pep and Rafa and Carmen Ijoan. Okay? And, well, as you know, Maurice Wancik is a topic that nobody really understands, but everybody feels very strongly about, so I think that there might be some discussion. So there's a quote that is attributed to Churchill, I think, that says that if you're not a communist at 20, you have no heart, and if you are still a communist at 40, you have no brain. So it's about the same with Maurice Wancik. You could say, if you're not in love with Maurice Wancik at 20, you have no heart, and if you're still in love with it at 40, you have no brain. And the reason why is essentially that a little bit like communism, it seems that it's something that's completely logical, which is that take a system, normal or complicated, choose a certain set of variables, which is a subset of these variables, as clear as you wish. Maurice Wancik allowed to write down a closed equation for this subset of variables. So it's like the thing you can code in any system to any level of factors you want, in fact, to infinite, actually. Now, that's the good part. Now, why is it also like that once you have made statement and you do any kind of practical calculation with this, you realize that you are stuck because this equation is really very, very complicated. In fact, it's just a reformulation of the original dynamics, so there is not much that you have gained. Okay? With this being said, I will try to show you that maybe there's a way to do something which is a bit practical with Maurice Wancik. Okay? So I don't want to derive Maurice Wancik again because on the blackboard for 5 minutes that's impossible, but I'll just fix the idea with a few equations. Okay? So we'll be discussing about the dynamics which I'll think about as being Hamiltonian, so I'll write it like that. So Z is the collection of momentum and position and momentum. And for most of the talk, I will need a bath, which is associated with thermal bath, added to it, but I will not write it explicitly. I always pretend it's there, but I will not write it. And I will denote the generator associated with this process by L. So this is this operator. Okay, but the radius with respect to Z. Okay? So the reason I need the bath is because I'd like that there be an equivalent distribution, which for simplicity, I'll take to be canonical. So that's what the bath is doing there. Okay, so then the idea of Maurice Wancik is the following, is that you introduce a collective variable, A of Z, right, and an associated distribution, which is a conditional distribution, is this distribution, but conditional on A being fixed, so let me write it down, it's C minus 1, not depending on alpha. Where C is just a normalization factor, which depends on alpha. This is a distribution Z. Okay, I'll denote the expectation using the distribution by P alpha. Right? What Maurice Wancik allows you to do is to write down closest of equation for A, Z, or alpha equivalently. So I'll write that down. There's always a KB here that I forget my little notes. The equation is like this. It's alpha dot is equal to nu alpha plus, okay, it's a a bit of a mouthful, but I'll write it down because I need for the take that is a minus. So it's g of alpha t minus s ds, and there is a term which is kdt. Bear with me. And then okay, so this is the equation for Maurice Wancik, which sometimes referred to as a GLE. I'll explain to you why in a minute. Right, which is it's an exact equation that satisfies alpha, meaning A of Z, Z satisfies this equation. And the coefficient that enters the equation can be explained as follows. The new alpha is just the projection of alpha of LA. So this is essentially the term is simply if you use chain rule, A dot, okay, you will get minus J grad H grad A, which is LA. And then it's the same that the first term in equation is just the average of that term with respect to this conditional distribution. The G alpha is just the free energy. So it's minus KBT times the log of the normalization factor that introduced here, okay, where C is just the integral of this factor over Z. Okay? And then there are, unfortunately, two more terms. One is R, so let me, this is R. Okay. And then there is M, simply E alpha of R. Tz, because it is the matrix that you construct by taking the tensor product between these. Actually, maybe if I okay. Okay, so this is exact. And two is the complementary of P. So P alpha is just 1 minus p alpha, right? And so in this case, you make the production of alpha and you evaluate it back at the easy. So the difficulty of the question is as follows. That, okay, so this I, this is a constraint average. So you can do it instead of using standard molecular dynamics simulation, constraint simulation from the original. So you would take this, put the proper constraint to fix the AZ, potentially put the expectation. This term is explicit, but that's fine. This is a free energy. So this is also something which might, I mean, when I say it's not necessarily easy to compute, but it is doable. Okay. The difficulty comes when you look at these two terms, the one that are here, because essentially this is saying that what you need to be able to do is to evolve this term as a view of a function of z, no longer the original dynamics, but on what is typically referred to as the orthogonal dynamics, which is the one where you have used this orthogonal projection, which is orthogonal to p. Okay? And this dynamics is not explicit. Right? So you can't compute that, you cannot compute this either. Right? Before I continue with that, maybe I should tell one thing, which is the reason why you think about this as a GLE, of course, is that even though this is completely equivalent to what here, you can think about this as a noise term. If you think about solving the system of equation with a given initial condition for A, so you fix A, and then you draw the Z at random from this distribution. So if you were to do that, that means that this term becomes random because it depends on Z, and so it's a noise term. Okay? All the rest are terms that involve only alpha, and that are, so there is no more dependency on the rest of the variable, the one that are the orthogonal complement of this, and so they are all deterministic. And in fact, you can check that this system of equations satisfies a fluctuation-dissipation relation. Okay. However, just to remove this point, you need to realize that even though you know the correlation, so M is the correlation of R, this noise is in general non-Gaussian, because you need to think about this, and then the randomness again comes from the fact that you would pick the Z from this distribution. Okay? So it's all quite complicated. So to proceed, what people typically do is they do what's called the Markov approximation. And so the Markov approximation involves, in fact, two steps. The first one, that you make the approximation that M of alpha t can, in fact, be represented, I'm going to use a bit of an abusive notation, as M alpha times the delta t, so you make it delta correlated in time, where for the M alpha, you take the integral from 0 to infinity of M alpha t. I'm writing, in fact, you will see I will have to modify that in a minute. If you do this, what you end up having is that you can drop this integral. This becomes M alpha grad alpha of G. So it's a local in time term. This one becomes local in time also, evaluated on the M alpha, the one that doesn't depend on time. And this guy becomes delta correlated in time, and in that case also Gaussian. Okay, so now you have the standard Langevin equation if you do this, right? Now, okay, so it's not completely clear to justify this approximation, because in general, it is not true that the alpha, that this decay, so the essential, I mean, this would be valid in the case where alpha evolves more slowly than this kernel decays to zero. Okay, which would have something, we would have to verify that a posteriori. But there's another problem with this approximation, which is that, well, if you really just say this, you have not made much progress, because you would still need to use the orthogonal dynamics here. Okay? So the next step that people are doing is that when they compute M, or when they compute R, you essentially, so you replace, in this expression, you replace ETQL by ETL. So use the true dynamics. Right? And these two steps are what you call the Markov approximation, except that if you do that, there's one more thing that you need to do, which is that if you really replace the orthogonal dynamics, which you don't know, by the actual dynamics that you do, then the problem is that if you extend this limit to infinity, you get zero. Okay? And so what people do is they introduce a time, and they cap. And the idea is that The rationale beyond this is to say, well, if there is a separation of time scale, there should be a plateau value here. So what I should see is I should see this factor. If I look at this integral as a function of capital T, I should see something that varies and then stays stable for a while and then start to decay. Okay? In practice, it is not so easy to find what T is, because typically you don't have a plateau. Okay? Okay, so which brings me to what we did with Pep and Rafa, which is to say, well, instead of making approximation at this level here, which are uncontrolled, we can maybe do approximation which will be also uncontrolled, I mean, meaning that we will have to verify them a posteriori, at the level of the original dynamics, in such a way that we're going to tweak the dynamics so that it gives us a well-defined Markovian approximation here. In other words, that if you do Morris-Wenzig on this tweaked system, in some appropriate limit, you get a well-defined equation where all terms are computable and that is local in time. So that was the goal. Yes?
Sorry? Definition of M on the boards, not always the right, but that's your left, the bottom line. That's a correlation function, right?
Yeah, it should be zero. Yes, it's the, yes. Okay, so let me explain what was the idea. Okay, the idea was, so imagine, and here I don't know, I need to appeal to maybe a few things that I'm not completely sure all people are familiar with. But, so we start with the operator L that is there. Okay? Imagine that I could introduce another operator that I will denote L2 for a minute, that for a reason that will be clear in a minute. So I introduce a new generator. So it will be a generator of a tweaked dynamics, which would have the following properties. First, I'd like that it conserve A. So meaning that if I look at L2 times A, it's equal to 0. And second, I would like it to be ergodic, so if I look at the dynamics that is generated by L2, I would like it to be ergodic with respect to the rho alpha z. Okay? I will refer to this dynamics as the fast virtual dynamics. And in a minute, on a concrete example, I'll show how to construct one. Okay? So if I define L2, I can now introduce two other operators, so L2 is one. Now, from L2, I can define L0 as being, I take the original L, I subtract L2, and I take the projection AZ. Sorry? No, L2 doesn't depend on alpha, but if you pick a value of alpha, it will be conserved. So the value of alpha is not explicit in L2, it's in the initial condition that you take. If you take a z that has a given az equal alpha, that alpha will be conserved. But the dynamics is defined everywhere. So it foliates your space, if you wish. And then I'm going to introduce L1, which is just the complementary. And okay, so far it looks a little bit ad hoc, so we have done this, we have done this, and we have done this. So obviously, with this definition, you see that L is just L1, L0 plus L1 plus L2. Right? Since if I add these two, I get L minus L2, sorry. If I add these two, I get L minus L2, and if I add L2, I get L. Okay? Another way I'm going to treat the dynamics is this way. And I'm going to write down explicitly again later what is happening, I mean, on an example, is I'm going to introduce an L epsilon, which is of this form. Where I've introduced a parameter epsilon here. Okay, so there's a parameter epsilon that has been introduced. Right? Clearly, if I take epsilon equal 1, this dynamics is the original one, right? And now what I'm going to do is I will consider what happens if you let epsilon go to 0. Okay? So what this is doing, the rationale behind this is quite clear and simple, is, well, as I explained before, the idea as to why we would get a Markovian approximation for this equation is if the orthogonal dynamics is much faster than the dynamics of the alpha, which on the original system may or may not be true, but is uncontrollable. The dynamics is what it is, and it can be separated, but it's never separate. I mean, it is what it is. If I do this tweak dynamics, I can actually accelerate the fast variable as much as I want while keeping the dynamics of the A, the alpha then, right, on the original time scale. Okay? So clearly, the dynamics which is associated with L epsilon will now be different from the dynamics of L. That's the modeling assumption that I will make. I will assume that they are not very different, right? And under this assumption, or approximation, then you can derive an exact form for this, which actually is the same as before, except that you can write down the term M slightly differently. Was there? Oh, okay. So let me write what M is in this case. Okay, so for those of you, I mean, this is not... So this is singular perturbation, so I don't want to do that because it would take a bit of time, but essentially if you try to solve an equation, so if you write down the backward Kolmogorov equation or the Liouville equation, if you wish, it's associated with this new operator, and then you make an ansatz for the solution as if it was an expansion in epsilon, you can solve it order by order. And the way it goes is that at the first order, it tells you that the slow variable are only variables of alpha, and then there's each time a solvability condition on the next order that gives you some more information. Okay, and in particular, you end up having an operator where the new alpha becomes simply p alpha of L0A, which in fact is the same as LA again, because this one is orthogonal. So it's the same as the one that was there. I'm just writing it explicitly this way, but it's the same as the one that is over there. The G is the same. And then the M can be written this way. It's L1, L2 minus 1, L1, P, which, in fact, if you wish, I write it as an operator, not as a. Okay, maybe I can write it a bit more explicitly. Which is, it's. Let me write it in a form which is the same as the one that you have there. It's e to the t L2 that is applied to L1a tensor product L1a, and then you take p alpha of this. So in other words, having done this, when you take the limit as epsilon go to zero, right? Okay, I should probably not have written that one because it's the same as before. What you end up having is that now you have an explicit expression for M. Well, in order to compute M, what you simply need to do is to evolve the system with the given L2 that you have chosen. Okay? Okay. Oh, sorry. This is the good point. This is that guy. It's the MT there. It's the. Yes. So. Yeah. You're right. It's this. Sorry. I forgot. It's that. And now the difference with respect to before is that you can push the time to infinity, because in fact the time that is appearing here is really not the original time. It's the time over this dynamics, but it is really rescaled by an epsilon square. Okay? So on this dynamics, if you're now looking at the fast dynamics of the fast variable, A is actually not evolving. So I can push this to infinity and get a well-defined result. Okay? Let me give you a concrete example, which hopefully will explain things. So the idea, which is the one that was in the paper with Pep and Rafa, was to try to see whether we can do that in the context of MD, where instead of using atoms, we would group them into coarse molecules, if you wish, and try to get to define these as being the A. And so let's look at, I'm going to use a bit of a complicated notation, but it will become clear in a second why I need that. Let me write it as a potential like this. Okay, so this is just an Hamiltonian system, right? And simply I'm using two indices, I, n, and then n, because the way I want to think about this is that I is defining, you know, all of these. So these are the I, and this would be the group n equal 1, and then there would be another group here, which would be n equal 2, etc., etc. So the I, n is just indexing what's going on. I1 is here, I2 is there, and so on and so forth. Okay? And what I would like to have, so that means that in this case, what I have is that Z is just QP, right? And the AZ that I would like to take is simply, okay, so it's the sum over IN, so it's the center of mass of the group. And its momentum. Right, so this gives me the mapping, which says what. So I'm only summing. So I'm taking the center of mass in each of the groups, and then I look what is their momentum. Okay. And so now to proceed, the only thing that I need to tell you is what is the L2 that you would take. Right. And for the L2. We simply did this. We took so let me first write it down and then I'll explain. And as I said at the beginning, there should be a bath added in this equation all the time. But it's this. Okay, so this is the system of equation that we took. So this defines L2. This is what the fast dynamics. And you can check that this dynamics actually is Hamiltonian, with the same Hamiltonian as before. The only thing that it has done is that you have changed the J matrix, the symplectic matrix in the dynamics. Okay, you can actually convince yourself of that. The J matrix is the one that makes this summation like that. So this is a Hamiltonian system, meaning that it is volume preserving. That's obvious because there's only momentum here and position here. It is Hamiltonian with respect to that. And if you put the appropriate bath here, right, which would have to be also constrained in such that it doesn't change the value of the A, so the values of these variables, right, you can guarantee that the distribution that you get is the equivalent of that one, so it will be E. And so it's Qn minus and then the delta of Pn okay and if you do so you get so now the projection is with respect to this. Right? And the limiting equation that you get, maybe I can write it here, as a very simple form, which is consistent, of course, with the one that was here, which is, I'm not having enough space, but it is Qn dot is equal to Pn divided by Mn. I am defining this factor as being, this is the total mass of this group. And then Pn dot is equal to, so it's the average force, so this of course is the force, right? This quantity here, the F, this is minus D over DQIN of V. Okay, so what you end up having here is that you get the force, which is, okay, maybe, so I get the force average. So the force here, the quantity that I need to average is just the sum over, is the total force that is on this particle. And then you have extra terms that comes up, which are of this nature. Is the same, so times Pn. Right, you're finished. So then there's plus the Pn, sorry, like this. And then there is a noise term, which I can represent this way, is the square root of 2kBt, the sum over m, bnm, times a Brownian motion, where the bnm have the property that if you take bnp, bmp, sum over p, it is equal to the gamma nm. Okay, and in general, you cannot exclude the fact that these friction coefficient here might depend on both the position, the coarse position and the coarse momenta, which is why there is this extra term that is popping out here, right? And the noise here is typically multiplicative. If the friction depend only on the position, then this guy would not be there. In which case, the equation would be simpler to compute. And the lastly, right, which is the equivalent of this, if you want to take what is gamma, if you want to know what is gamma nm, what you simply need to do is you need to evaluate. So it's the fluctuating force. You take so you take the force on n, this the force, of course, this before average, so this is this average, but before average, the force is a function of the original position, right? So you take the force minus its average, you evaluate this at q tilde t, p tilde t, I'll tell you what that is, then you multiply that by fm minus fm, the average that you evaluate at the QP. You take the integral of that from 0 to infinity, and before doing that, you take the average, where the average is with respect to the distribution which I have written here, this constrained distribution. In other words, this is simply computing the Green Cubo factor, the autocorrelation function of the fluctuation of the force along the trajectory. This guy here is the solution of this system. Okay, so you take, so all of these things are computable because I can, this is just an Hamiltonian system that I can compute with, right? I can use that and the ergodicity to compute any type of average, including this one, and of course this one, and then take the time integral to find what is the friction coefficient. Okay. So, I how much time do I have? I think I started late. Okay. So I'm not gonna. Then we can stop. Okay. Yeah. I would have to hook up the computer to show you the result, but maybe we can discuss that later. In the paper, Rafa implemented this, making one approximation, which is that the implementation was made for an ensemble of star polymers. And the approximation was made that, in principle, if I have, so if this is a star polymer, right, and this is another one like this, and I have many of them, then in principle, there is nothing in this formalism that tells you that this factor here, or this one, is not a complicated function of the position of them all. In general, that's what's going to be the case. Okay, and so if that's the case, there is no other way to simulate this equation that try to do something which is on the fly. Each time you know what is the position q and the momentum p of all of your star polymers or your molecules, if you wish, you would have to launch a simulation at this level, compute this average, use this information to update the position and repeat. Right? This is very much in the flavor of HMN, heterogeneous multiscale method strategy to integrate equation that we have implemented. In the paper, something simpler was done, which was an assumption was made that this friction coefficient here and the force only depend on one guy at a time. In that case, use of isotropy, translation, invariance, and all that, you can actually pre-compute these factors because you can tabulate. So you can do a calculation in which at the beginning of the calculation, you find all the value you would need for this gamma and all the and the value that you need for the force, and then you use that subsequently. Okay? And what was shown is that, I mean, Rafa can comment if I'm saying. Right. Okay. So consistently, actually, as DPD, becomes a DPD system. In fact, I don't have time to go into that. But the gamma here has the right property of DPD, which is that if you sum the off-diagonal term, you get minus the diagonal one. So it preserves momentum. Okay. It's really it has all the nice property you'd like. So when doing that, we could check actually that this equation do reasonably well. If in the sense that if you look at the autocorrelation function of the displacement of these star polymer, they're actually pretty well reproduced. And what is interesting is that they are much better reproduced than if you were just to do coarse-grained molecular dynamics. So coarse-grained molecular dynamics would be to essentially truncate things at this level. Okay? This would be coarse-grained molecular dynamics is Broughton, and I don't remember the name of the coder, I think, that introduced that. That doesn't work, rather than Broughton. That doesn't work very well, in the sense that if you compute the autocorrelation function with this, you end up having very long tail oscillating, whereas if you put the right friction coefficient, pre-compute again, you get the decay on the right time scale. Okay? And so in the few minutes that remain, I just want to explain this a little bit, because there is of a mystery here, which is really what I don't understand, but I mean, there's maybe a bit of a... Okay, so let's back up a little bit. I realize that my blackboard is really full, but so the way this dynamics was defined here, right, there is something that was done that is not innocent at all, and I'll try to explain to you that on another system in a second, which is that I could have decided to take define L2 so that these properties are satisfied, and then just split this into L2 and the rest. So in other words, use only something that would be an alternative L epsilon. Let me make it would simply be L0 minus L2 plus 1 over epsilon square L2. This would be another choice. Right. If you do this, you can go through the algebra again. You will see that the only thing that you get is coarse-grained molecular dynamics. So coarse-grained molecular dynamics, if you wish, can be obtained by making, instead of this ansatz, this ansatz. Okay? And so what is happening here is actually quite clear. It is simply that somehow when you accelerate, because so if I think about what is being done here, right, is I'm taking my original system, I'm declaring certain variables to be slow, okay, and in order to guarantee that they be slow, I take all of the rest and I make them faster. So they are slow in comparison. In doing so, if I just do that, which would be more along the line of this, what you end up having is that you kill the fluctuation along the line. Like what happened is that this fast degree of freedom somehow self-average and you just get this that comes out. In order to maintain the right level of fluctuation in your simulation, which actually is what you would like to get from the Markov approximation on Morris-Wenzig, as you tweak the dynamics, you need to increase the level of the noise. So let me explain that by writing another system of equation, which is probably simpler. I'll just finish with that. Suppose that I take a system which is separable. So I'm going to have two groups of variables, which I declare to be 1 and 2. V here is my potential, and it depends on Q1 and on Q2. Right? And then I have another one here, which is P2 is equal to Q2, is equal to P2 M2. Let's look at this system of equation. So one thing I could do here, which is equivalent to what I explained by using this guy, is I could change the dynamics, in fact, in a way which preserved the Hamiltonian character, and just introduce 1 over epsilon square. And so, okay, let me just, I divide all this by epsilon square, and I divide this one by epsilon square. Clearly, this is just, again, changing the symplectic matrix. If you do that, if you do this modification, okay, well, you can easily convince yourself that what you end up having is, again, simply where G is the free energy. So in other words, what you have is that this is the average of the four, so G of Q1 is simply minus KBT up to irrelevant factors. Okay. Take the limit as epsilon goes to 0 in this system of equation, you get that. And again, you kill all fluctuation. There is no fluctuation anymore. You just get the average. Right? What happened is that at this level, by accelerating these guys, the second group, you don't get any fluctuation here. If you want to maintain fluctuation, you do it to do something else. And what we did, more appropriately, is simply say, well, in this equation, I can add this term. With a 1 over epsilon. This is adding back the fluctuating force, if you wish. Okay? Now, when you take the limit as epsilon goes to 0, you get that plus a bath. The bath comes from this. This is this term is the equivalent of the one that I had added here. Okay? Okay, so this gives an idea for calculation, actually, which is that the way, because, okay, so what, and I'll just conclude with that. The way, I really want a cookie though. Okay, so one way we could integrate this equation, as I explained, which is in the flavor of things that we had done before, iterative multiscale method, is that again, I mean, you would start with some integrating scheme for the equation here, right? Meaning that it's a scheme that updates the P and the Q. Obviously, this scheme will need an explicit value for gamma and the average force that you don't have. And so each time you know this position, you're going to calculate the F and the gamma by going into an inner loop which will simulate this fast virtual system, use this data to compute this object and this object, and make a step, and repeat. Now, the problem with this approach is, one, it's quite tedious because you need to introduce all of this coupled system, and second, it's not completely clear whether it will be efficient, because you need to guarantee that in the inner loop, the one where you compute gamma and F, the computational work that you do at the end is less than the computational work you would do into trying to evolve the original system. So that means that whatever it is that you do at this level, you better use it efficiently at this level, which means that when you have gotten these terms, you need to be able to take a very big time step. If you can't take a very big time step, if you take a tiny time step and then you repeat, you will end up calculating more at this level than you did in the original system. If you have chosen your variable to be slow, that should be doable, but it's not guaranteed. In fact, we have done that previously in the context of a big colloidal particle that is hit by small particles, where you can show that you can actually make it efficient. Okay? These type of idea are more trying to, the equivalent of that at that level, is more trying to do all of this seamlessly, which is, can you take the original system and then tweak it in a way which is actually quite gentle, in such a way that you will make it, the calculation, more efficient, right, while at the same time having not much of a computational overhead. Okay, so the way you do that is actually quite interesting, and it's a bit counterintuitive. Though I suppose all of you know Carpainello. So the idea of Carpainello is the following, is to say, if the electrons are really fast, I'm close to the adiabatic limit, which is Born-Oppenheimer, and so what I can do, they're always at the ground state, what I can do is, instead of killing myself into computing with electrons that are that light, I can just increase their mass by a factor 20, and I will still be close to the limit, but my system will be much less stiff. Okay? So it's the same idea here, except that the epsilon, right, I told you I want to take epsilon going to zero. In fact, in the computation, what you really want to do is to take an epsilon which is bigger than one. The idea being that the original system, the one where there is no epsilon, where this term is not there, this term is not there, and this one is not there, is supposed to be stiff. Meaning you already, there is another epsilon, if you wish, is implicit in this system, that makes that you are close to whichever limit you could get by adding the epsilon and pulling it down. But if you are really close to the limit, then you can push yourself away from the limit a little bit and still get a system which is accurate. That amounts to putting the epsilon in this equation and putting them bigger than one. Okay? This is, if you wish, this is doing coarse grain molecular dynamics a la Maurice Wenzig in a way which is very similar to Carpainello, right? Or for people that do or artificial compressibility method, for the, those of you who do CFD. Okay? And so that's what we are trying to do now, but it is, it touched upon quite interesting question from a, and that's really what I don't know, but from a mathematical viewpoint, which is that there are not so many system, Hamiltonian system, or even with EatBath, for which you know that with adiabatic separation you have nice limits. And in particular, typically these systems not only involve when you want to take limits, like for instance big colloid with small colloid particle, typically they involve changing the masses, but also changing the number of particles, right? That, in fact, is what this term, in a way, is trying to mimic, which is that if you just decrease the masses and you don't increase the number, well, then the net effect that you have can average out. You just go into the law of large number, which is without that. This is trying to capture the CLT, central limit theorem, by boosting the fluctuations so that they remain at the right order when you do the simulation. Okay? Well, I'll leave you with that. That's...
how you put the epsilon does matter, so you need to know.
No. It's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that if you were, so pretend that your original system is this one. Pretend that your original, I mean, forget about where I came from. Suppose that my original system is this one, right? It is that, with this term included. What I'm just saying is that this system of equation, if epsilon is very small, is such that the dynamics of the slow variable, which is Q1, P1, is independent to leading order to epsilon. In other words, if epsilon is 10 to the minus 12 or 10 to the minus 3, you'll get pretty much the same thing. So you're asking a question which of course we don't. So we don't know how to pick collective variables that are really slow. So right, the approximation, the strategy is somewhat constructive, in the sense that a little bit like, but it's. I mean, the problem if you try to do original transitional in the field in this plateau, you never find it here. Probably the problem could come back at us, which is that if you change the epsilon. Right, you'd like to find, is there a value of epsilon for which I don't see much change in the dynamics of the Q1, P1, or of the capital Q, capital P. If that's the case, this is a good choice of variable. If it's not the case, it's a bad choice, but then the method is not constructive enough to tell you how to change that. Right? Yes.
The smallest parameter is the wave number k, where you can rigorously say that the slow variables evolve like a dot equals ik times something.
Okay? Right.
So k is your epsilon. And then in your kernel, you see the time scale separation involves a slowly decaying correlation function which goes by e to the minus k squared times something times t.
Yes.
It appears as a square in that, because of usual.
Mm-hmm.
So does that have any bearing on this discussion of whether you should be splitting the loophole operator up into parts involving linear terms and quadratic terms?
It is the same thing, which is that if you, I mean, you know, what you're saying essentially is that diffusive and advective timescale typically are different. And if you have a non-trivial advective timescale, right, you're going to get that the diffusive timescale is swept out by that unless you boost it up. It's essentially saying that if you want to keep having the fluctuation at the level of the CLT, you need to boost the variable after revolving the mean, right? Because otherwise, law of large number tells you that you converge to the mean. So it's all related to that. It's the law of large number is what gets you the limiting equation with the G. And in order to get something else, I need to take the fluctuation and boost them by square root of n, which is... Right, and that's why there is a 1 over epsilon here and a 1 over epsilon square there. This is n and this is square root of n, if you wish.
So following up on that, I'm more related to the fact that in the Riemann equation, you're so simulated, you have a stochastic triangle with this gravel factor, and you have a mystic triangle with a linear factor.
No, that's not the same thing.
Right.
No, because that's just the nature of the noise. But it cannot be related to that, because if you don't add this term or if you don't add this one, it's not only the noise that you miss, but it's also the dissipation. And the dissipation term, this term here has the standard scaling in delta t, right? So it's you really, I mean, the way, you know, the fluctuation that comes from there, this thing, if you wish, is telling you that the bath is pumping energy in and out of your system. Okay, and then you can account for this balance by a friction term plus a random noise, right? And but you miss both if you don't put the right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think you were nice when you were doing. Did you?
Yeah, just quick. So, I mean, how is the effective equation to get out the Williams-Swanson worry and then this gas planet expansion different from just doing that stochastic mode reduction on the original equation and forget Swanson worry?
That's what we did. I mean, so I'm not. So Alex said there's no epsilon in the original equation, but this is.
I'm just putting the epsilon in, see, L was like.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, this is already can be found in there's the 84 paper by Papanicolaou in the Rocky Mountain, where he just showed that if you know there was, Indeed, once you have said that, you can forget about Maurice Wenzig. You just do a standard, you know, asymptotic expansion with this operator, and you get the limiting equation. It's just that the reason why I made the parallel is because this equation has the same structure as a Markovian approximation of Maurice Wenzig, except that you don't have the plateau problem and you know what your orthogonal dynamics is. That's all. Consistent with the Markovian approximation, yes.
You said up there the noise in Maurice Wenzig is not
necessarily. Well, at that level, it is not necessarily Gaussian. But as soon as you make the Markovian approximation here, then it becomes Gaussian. That's because the Gaussianity comes from the fact that if you look at 2 points, you get delta correlated, so 4 points is vanishingly small. If you have non-Gaussian noise, that means that your memory kernel is actually non-trivial. So, for example, I can give you one thing which I know, right? Which is that if you do, this is completely different from this, but if you take proteins, there are these FRET experiments that actually look at how the regions of gyration of protein evolve in time. There are people like Shunishi that have done that in Harvard. And they've tried to map that into a Langevin equation and discovered that doesn't work. The only way to make it work, and the fit then becomes good, is by assuming that the kernel that you have here decays algebraically. In other words, that the noise is a fractional Brownian motion, where you have correlation. So you can do these things, but the way this was done over there is not really by derivation. It was more by fitting to some data. You can get the fractional Brownian motion. There are paper by the guy who was involved in optimal Ras Kupferman. Ras Kupferman has shown that you can take what's called the Zwanzig model or Katz-Zwanzig model, where you take one big guy that is coupled to many oscillator, right? In that system, you can take appropriate limit and derive Maurice Wenzig non-Markovian with a kernel that is consistent with this fractional Brownian motion. So you can do that. This is out of the, beyond the scope of what we did here. Yes, but right. I'm not sure. So if the question is when can you derive that exactly, to the best of my knowledge, this paper by Kupferman and maybe a follow-up by mathematician are the only one where there is a rigorous statement that are being made about that. The thing that I said before is a protein is just an observation. It's a fit. In last transition, there is no slow variable. There is a continuum. Sure. There are not so many cases where you can prove it, though. That was just the point I was making.